to Piercing the Veil on bbsradio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing. 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations. 3. Constructive trust and wealth preservation. And 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
Well, hello. Welcome back, everybody. This is Piercing the Veil with Jordan Michael and co-host Corey Stevens. Corey,
greetings.
How are you feeling today?
Excellent, man. Excellent. Glad to be back.
Man, it's a beautiful day.
True indeed. True indeed.
Awesome. Okay. Well, last week we did a little role play. We did some call-ins. We took a few questions and sort of analyzed in the moment. I had a lot of fun with that. We might try a little bit more of that next week. At the end of the show, I will announce, I haven't really decided finally what we're going to do. I have a few ideas, and by the end of the show, I will announce what we're going to do next week. And then we'll start with our guests again after that. Corey, the focus of this show, we promised our listeners last week, would be public versus private. We're going to get real deep into this, but just to give a basic overview for people who are just getting in, what's your understanding? I know we went through MIC together, which was mm-hmm. You know, for lack of a better word, it was a big fluff ball. But they did show us some materials that are what I would deem as appropriate for learning a basic or intrinsic knowledge of the difference between the two. So what's your basic understanding of the public and the private, if you will?
My basic understanding of public and private. Well, how about de jure versus de facto? I'll throw it back at you. How about de jure versus de facto?
We can go there. De jure, de facto, those are terms to denote of force and of right. Mm. So the first would be de facto being of force, of fact. It's just the way things are. You've heard people say that before. Mm-hmm. The entire society has sort of basically accepted on some level, subconsciously or consciously, made the choice to accept a social norm or a condition or a law or a statute, yada, yada, yada. The combination and compilation of those which constitutes or builds the entirety of the moral government or the moral society, if you will. And obviously that's tied into the statutes and the laws. So the way the government operates is, you know, a few people make the rules and everybody else either complies or they get beaten down until they realize that they need to comply to be socially accepted. And then it just, that's de facto, as opposed to a de jure, which is of right, where as long as you do not hurt anybody, damage their property, and you're not dishonorable in your contracts, then you're allowed to pretty much do whatever the fuck you want to do.
you mean there's only one rule as opposed to, what, 6 million statutes and codes?
Well, depending on your perception, depending on your level of awareness and what you're willing to consent to, then yeah. You know, if you're on in such a level as myself, where the only rules I make are for myself, and based upon how I would want to be treated and how I would feel in a certain situation, and I'm not perfect. Obviously, personal agendas and emotions get in the way from time to time. But knowing and recognizing that and pulling back on it and just, you know, pretty much dying every day as a person, does that make sense? And rebuilding your techniques, rebuilding your responses, your automatic ingrained emotions. And so doing that in the moment is really important, and being aware of it, okay? And the publicness or the social aspect of things really changes how people behave. So you're either going to be strictly authentic and genuine, or you're going to have a mask on. So that's really what I want to go into is like, what is truly private and what is truly public? And to identify those things, we look at what is intrinsically, inherently, or just automatically private and what's automatically accepted to be known in the public. Okay. So we'll get a little bit into that.
All right. So you mentioned in another conversation that we had that private would be your thoughts, for example. Things that go on inside your head that you never speak on and you never act on. that is ultimately private, at least in terms of other human beings who are not telepaths.
That's right. And also, until it becomes expressed, you might not express it verbally. But what you're thinking, desiring, and feeling could manifest in such a way so many times with so much proof and factual evidence that an outside observer has no choice but to say that person desires that.
Or body language.
That's right. And look at the way they're behaving and acting. Their actions.
Facial expressions. Mm-hmm.
It's all tied in.
So then it becomes public.
And it's like a shift. And also, if that person is addressed about that issue and they clarify and say, no, that's not where I was coming from at all, then that whole construct of appearance, it appeared that this person desired this thing, is now gone. It's renegotiated. It's dissolved. It's reabsorbed into a different come from. And thereby now what the original reason can either be disclosed or it can be kept private. Now, that's called defeating presumption. So not only do you have your private side, but you must defeat presumptions on what you're doing privately.
Conditional acceptance.
So you can't be dragged into the public on somebody else's terms or thoughts, presumptions, or feelings.
Right. It may have appeared to you that my body was expressing what I was thinking, but I assure you, I was not thinking that.
Exactly. Yeah, and see there, you left it private. You could say, I was thinking, yada, 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 clear it up for them. Now you guys are operating on a public basis, and if there's nobody else around and they have the understanding not to share it, then again, aren't you still back in the private?
Okay.
There's a lot of patriot guys and a lot of patriot mythology. It's like, you can't use the public process in the private, and you can't use the private blah, 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 and you can't use the mailing system like this. We're going to get into the mailing system later. I'm going to clear that thing up for everybody. Okay. And it's not true. It all flows back and forth.
On that note, as far as process and you know, we were talking about private thoughts and versus expressing those private thoughts. Can we move into the fictional versus the real?
Well, what is a fiction? Just a creation.
It's a creation. So, in terms of...
It has some substance. It has to have a tether or a lifeline from the real, original reality or world. Otherwise, it wouldn't have...
It wouldn't exist.
It's like a hologram. You can't have a piece of the hologram or representation of the hologram without the original.
Right. So, the
fiction... Something has to be split.
Right. So, the fiction derives from the real. Ah, you said split. That's interesting, too, because that gets into trust.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll go into that another show, but what I do want to come back to and be very detailed about is a graphic representation for our listeners. What do I mean when I say there's a tether? What do I mean when there's an origination or a source energy or a tie to the appearance or the fiction? Mm-hmm. Well, go watch Donnie Darko. When he's traveling at billions of times a second into different realities, that's what that little worm thing that's coming out of his chest represents. He's navigating alternate dimensions and realities. You understand? And the experience he's having is private. The experience is only his. Nobody else can experience exactly what he's experiencing until we get that level of technology. So if you understand that his experience is the private, real reality substance, and it's being projected into all these different other possibilities or probable realities that aren't quite real yet because they have no substance injected into them, sort of like cream filling into a donut. It's a hollow donut. Taurus, universe, huh? Yeah. Okay. Well, so until he injects his substance, his perception, his consciousness, his observation, his worldview, his experience, there's no substance. So that little worm that's going into all these, that little virtual thing that you see on Donnie Darko, represents the fiction. That is the construct. And it will take shape or take form once it's been defined by the substance. And then also by the conditions, the surrounding conditions of the medium whereby the fiction is expressed. Obviously, if you're in a social circle that's open and conscious, you can express multidimensional ideas without fear of reprisal or being confronted, right? So the conditions surrounding the fiction or the story that you're creating to express your truth or experience of that subject is well received. Therefore, it takes the form of a moldable, passable, shapeable data stream or information. Make sense?
Now, if you're in a low-vibe place where people are very, very angry, they're just fighting to survive, they don't care about anything except for their next meal, their next hit, their next whatever, understand? Then you're probably not going to be that well-received. You might need some extra boost or some sort of proof or some sort of extra substance to prove that it's worthy of their time because everything else is so important to them. So that's that speaks to substance projecting into the fiction, into the creation to give it form, but also the reality and the surroundings forming it, and then the perception of, or observation of the other souls creates the third part. Everything's Trinity. All right. So I said we're going to take a few calls here. I think we do have somebody on the line. We're going to let them wait for just a minute or so. It's Ross. He's been on my show before. And I want to get your perspective, Corey, real quick, on any rules or guidelines you might have experienced or know about as far as sort of navigating public-private.
Okay. There's a document out there called Creditors and Their Bonds, which I found very useful in navigating the system, as it were, the legal system, the commercial world. I forgot who the author was. I'll pull it up in a second. But the first rule, he's got four rules, and he's got a description, basically, in these four rules of that outlines public and private. In my view, the first rule is the fiction and the real cannot mix. The public and the private cannot mix. Okay, and he goes on to say, you cannot create a public debt. That's against the law. A creditor can issue a bond, evidence of a public debt, and use the bond to discharge other public debts. You cannot use public Federal Reserve routing numbers on the private credit instruments you use. I believe that's what got some of our mentors bagged up, among other things. Basically, the state cannot file a claim against you because it is a fictitious entity and you are a real man. Then it must file a claim against the straw man to get you.
We know that. We know that. And that's the crux of the whole patriot argument. I'm the living man on the land and the blah. Nobody's denying you're a living man with living, breathing flesh and blood, bro. We're not denying that. The judge is laughing at you. He's not denying that. Otherwise, how the hell would you be speaking? Right? They know that you are consenting in some way by your actions or your lack of duty to know your rights and how to contract. They know that you're contracting yourself in or consenting into a constructive trust where they can act like you're the fiction.
Right. And they know that they know the game. Under those circumstances, you're not telling them anything,
The most basic thing, Corey, to the judge to go, well, yeah, there's this guy here, and I wouldn't be asking, like, Casper the Ghost. Like, I can't deal with just pure fiction. You understand that? A fiction cannot deal with pure fiction.
Right.
There must be some substance behind it and some substance on the other side. Excuse me.
Like the tether you mentioned.
Tether. So what I'm talking about, I want our listeners to view this or visualize this. I want you to look at a sort of like a tall container of water, sort of like a fish tank, if you will, very tall, skinny fish tank. And I want you to imagine that the bottom layer or the bottom half separated is water. And on the top is a red colored oil, an oily liquid, which is lighter than the water or hell. Okay. So you've got a top half, which is red, and you've got a bottom half, which is bluish clear water. Now, what happens, Corey, if you take a stick and you poke that stick straight down from the top through the oily layer, which is red, by the way, and then down real quick and jab it into the water and then pull it out? What are you going to get? You're going to get an effect of the oil being thrust into the water medium and displacing that area of water, sort of like a lava lamp type effect.
Right.
Now, for that brief moment, where is the oil? So the oil, if it's private and the water on the bottom is public...
Where's the public. It's amazing that you bring the oil and water thing up because I was thinking about it earlier before the show, and I was like, salad dressing, right? You got vinegar, which essentially is water soluble, and you got oil, and you shake it up to put it on your salad. Why do you shake it up? Because you want both.
Yeah. And you think that they're mixing, but if you let it sit there, they're going to separate again, and they've never fully mixed. The molecules are still connected to each other only and charged to each other only, and they're just sort of trying to restructure or wrap themselves. It's like twisting a beach towel up and folding it all around. One side is not touching the other. You know, little pieces of it might be, but the continuity of that side, for the most part, is it's still its own side.
Right.
Because when you unroll it, there's two sides. So the dimension is still there. You've just twisted it around. Some parts are touching each other, sort of like stargates or wormholes, sort of like the Einstein-Rosenberg bridge where it folds space on itself. So you can have those occurrences, but for the most part, you still have the sides or the dimensions. Those are existent. They're constant. Right. They never go away. So in the same way, the public and the private never mix, but they're there. They're mingling. They're touching each other. They're around. They're in between. They're like in each other's way sometimes. Mm. You understand? And so you've got to unwrap it.
Almost indistinguishable at times.
That's right. That's
which leads me to the rule number two in creditors and their bonds, which is stay in honor at all costs.
Yeah, that's a big one. And what is your perception of honor? You know, what might be honor to one person is not honor to another. But as long as both people maintain a basic societal accepted standard or like a base level of niceness or golden rule, I guess I should say, then what one perceives as honor and the other perceives as dishonor is a matter to be worked out in the civil realm and, you know, or morally between each other. And it's not necessarily a stark factual honor dishonor. You kill somebody because they're trying to kill you, you understand? It changes things as opposed to if you just go out and you murder somebody. That's honor, dishonor.
Right, right. Let me read this segment in here, what he says. And this I'm sure you'll resonate with. Your mission, should you decide to accept it, is to honor the state when it asks you, parentheses, in an aggressive way, to use your credit or your exemption. The state is raising you up as a creditor every time it gives you a presentment. It is your choice. You can honor the state by accepting its presentment and issuing an authorization voluntarily for it to get enough of your credits to equal the value of its presentment dollar for dollar.
Yeah, or, it's all presumption, Corey. It's all constructive trust. Let me ask all our listeners a question. I don't even have to look at you. I don't have to be in your room or your land, wherever you're at. I want you to raise your hand if you've never bought anything in your life, never taken any benefits, if you've never ever entered into any agreement with any public entity ever, raise your hand, and you're probably going to look around. You're going to be very, very fucking lonely.
I'm a sovereign.
You. Yeah, I commend you if you exist, okay? But the likely fact is that most people have not raised their hands because they have bought something, right?
And purchased. So purchase.
Yeah, so you've taken, we'll get it, the buy, sell versus purchase and sell. Well, you've taken a benefit. So you've created a presumption, a constructive trust, if you will. And so, yes, if they want to use your credit, well, guess what, buddy? You've got the duty to discharge the presumption that they're allowed to or analyze that you need to because it's better for you because you live in the United States, you live under the government structure, you live here right now, it is what it is. The police have guns, you don't, or the police have more guns, or they've got more organization. This is not a defeatist attitude. I'm just saying, analyze in the moment, what is the biggest threat, what is the easiest solution, and go for the easiest solution.
Right. Give them access to your credit or
some other performance so they can fake your credit and trade their bonds for their charges because we explained what's happening.
Or stay in the warehouse while they bond
you
up.
Yeah, you could just stay in a hotel and get three hots and a cot if you like.
Right.
Yeah, I really like that. I want to get into the third and the fourth rule, but we've got Ross on the line, so we're going to go ahead and bring Ross on now. This is Ross Diot, excuse me. Ross he was Diot. On one of our shows on February 14th, Valentine's, I believe. You can listen to that at bbsradio.com/piercingtheveil/archives and click on the date. He's a spiritual rapper and a great friend of mine. And I think he's just calling in with a random question. So go ahead, Ross, fire away.
Hello, are you guys there?
We're here. Yeah. We can hear you.
Okay. Well, my question is, you guys talk a lot about judges and contracting, and fortunately, I've never had to be appear in front of a judge for any reason, so I'm super thankful to have steered clear of that thus far. So my question is, I know that when officers come and approach your door, you know, when they pull you over, which I believe isn't even legal, and they ask for your insurance and driver's license, you know, say I was going 5 miles over the speed limit, how would I reclaim my rights, you know, to the maximum degree that I can while I'm probably carrying a passport? I know you guys talk a lot about that, presenting that ID.
That's so a good question.
Because that's the most realistic situation where I find myself in my rights.
Yeah, a lot of people find themselves in that. I understand your question. I understand where you're coming from. And I'll say this. I don't necessarily believe you've lost any rights or need to reclaim anything. Again, it's all presumption. An officer has investigative powers. When they turn on their lights, they're actually declaring that a crime has been committed or they've witnessed an emergency or that there's some danger to the public that they must abate immediately. There are a lot of honorable people out there. The other day I saw an officer watch somebody drive by in a truck. Their TV fell out in the middle of the road. It's a danger or hazard to somebody else, and it's also a damage to the person who lost it. They pulled on their lights. They turned around, blocked the roadway, and they waved to the person. They backed up. They assisted physically while on duty without, you know, asking for ID and checking to make sure these guys weren't armed or anything. He risked his life. Because it's dangerous out there. He risked his life and he helped pick up the TV and put it in the back of the truck. So it's all what you're in alignment with. It's all what energy you're manifesting. To certain extents, you're going to be dealing with very asshole-ish people or very nice people who are all investigating. Yeah. That's their job. They're all starting an investigation on the side of the road. So the more that you can position yourself from the get-go before you get in your car to, one, have a record, to, two, make it clear to them that the liability is being recorded, you know, like a video recorder or cam or something, or an audio recording. Three, to let them know, look, I understand the capacity that I wish to stand in, which is private, and I don't want to be, you know, surety or collateral for your commercial presentments or your investigation where you're trying to get a charge. So there are certain behaviors, certain things you can do, Ross. Walk you through a quick thing, and I hope this doesn't get, you know, changed, but if you get pulled over, turn your blinkers, your emergency lights on, flash them for a bit, and then turn them off. Hey, I see you. I'm pulling over, right? You put your flashers on, you put them off, you turn your signal on to where you're going, to the right, if you're going to the left, whatever. Then, when you pull over, you're going to turn your car off. You're going to take the keys and put them under the dashboard, underneath the registration sticker, which is typically to the left of the steering wheel on the dashboard. As the officer approaches your vehicle, he'll more than likely have his hand on his taser or his gun, which is standard protocol. He'll be looking in the rear, in the left driver's side rearview mirror at your face. He'll be looking right above that at the registration stickers as he's walking up to see if he has a reason to continue the contact. When he gets to your window should be cracked about 3 inches, and you should say something along the lines of, "Good afternoon, how may I assist you? Greetings, how can I help you?" They'll say something along the lines of a leading question to try to get testimony, which is, do you know how fast you're going? Do you know why I pulled you over today? Yada, yada, yada. And Ross, I will tell you this. The best answer you can give him, I'm not aware of why you pulled me over. Are you aware of a crime being committed? Have you witnessed a crime today? Because I see that you've declared an emergency by turning your emergency lights on. How can I help you? Oh, well, sir, I clocked you at going 45 and the speed zone is 40. I'm not aware of that. Forgive me, officer. I wasn't aware that my speed was over. I was aware that the speed limit was such and such. You might even leave that out because then, you know, future tickets, that's testimony. So I wasn't aware of speeding. How can I assist you? Well, you know, I clocked you at – he's going to say it again. I clocked you at 45 and – you know how fast you're going or something like that, try to get you to testify. You just say something along the lines of, listen, again, I'll refer you to my previous answer. Or again, I'm not aware of that. What I am aware of is that I'm a busy man and I don't have any proof or evidence that you've calibrated your gun in the past day or in the past 2 hours. I don't even know when you're required to calibrate it and if you have met those requirements. So anything that you're reading could be a miscalculation. And rather than us go through a whole court battle and bring you in as a witness to testify on whether or not you have, let's just go our separate ways. You understand I'm a peaceful man. I don't have any crazy felony warrants. I'm not wanted for any sexual crimes or murders or anything nuts like that. You know, I'd be willing to.
Okay, so
to
it's not grant giving you the testimony and
yeah, so
declaring
listen, I'd be willing,
what state
officer,
you're operating
I'd,
in.
I'd be willing to grant you the passport and my keys for a limited term of 10 minutes while you conduct a brief or preliminary investigation to ensure that what I have told you is true. And if you return with those within that time period, I will understand that I'm on my way free to go. If you don't and you fail to return without renegotiating for more time, I'll understand that you owe me $1,000 because my time's valuable. And the performance of you returning late will be as if you sign your name to a contract. And it will bind your employers and your supervisors and whoever your high contracting parties are for the city that are allowed to make that decision. Do you understand? Sir, have a nice day. You know, be careful, be safe. You know, they give you your passport back. Or they'll go take your passport back to their car. They'll conduct an investigation. They'll make some excuse as to why nothing's wrong and you're free to go. Oh, I didn't see anything, so you're free to go. To save face, obviously. And then you'll be free to go.
Yeah.
If you get in a car or any type of conveyance, and you get on the public roadway, you have the duty to be ready for an encounter. And if you're not, it's your own fault.
Sorry. Yeah.
That's a really good question. Thank you.
Yeah, and that's a direct...
That was a great answer.
Yeah, and that's an excellent description of what's happening in the moment. There are any number of other things that can be done behind the scenes whereby your status is established with various procedures and notices to certain high contracting parties whereby you can say to the officer and present him some evidence or paperwork there too and say, you know, look, perhaps we would need to contact your supervisor or someone who, you know, might be have more wherewithal with regards to my status and what I'm presenting to you.
That's right. And that speaks, Corey, that actually speaks into the context of our show. And thank you, Ross. I really appreciate that. That was a wonderful question. Speaks in the context of the public versus private, because at some point you're privately interacting with the officer. Once you've made that agreement, you've overstood his public capacity. Mm. Now, again, you both understand there's like an unspoken agreement that if somebody drives by and shoots at you or somebody hits somebody else and there's an emergency that happens, instantly, the officer observes that, he's gone, he's back in his public capacity, and he's got to go take care of business. So your agreement, which took precedence over his public duties, because somebody else, it's sort of like triage, somebody else needs the service more, now it's sort of an exemption or a breakthrough clause. Mm-hmm. Because he's putting his life on the line, because he's responsible for others' lives, no matter if he's an asshole about it or how he conducts himself personally, when the moment comes down to it, his responsibility and his duty takes precedence. So knowing that, and knowing in the background that you might, even though you have a status, you might be running up against somebody who thinks that it's their job to put you in jail for the public interest, and that you might need to renegotiate with the superiors.
Right.
So just understand, it could go, you know, pear-shaped on you, and it's a lesson. It's a learning experience.
It's also based on presumption. You're traveling in a vehicle. Okay. It's got public plates. It's registered to the state, or it may or may not be, but typically registered to the state, you have insurance, it's presumed you have a license, and it's presumed that you will present it to them and that they have jurisdiction over you, right? So that's already a presumption that they have jurisdiction over you because you're supposed to have all of these things. And so some of their authority comes from, or where their sense of authority comes from, because there are already contracts behind the scenes that you have either knowingly or unwittingly involved yourself with.
Well, Corey, this is why I love you, man. That's why I have you on the show, and why you're a very valuable contributing equal part to this, is because you bring up the things that my brain knows and has in the memory banks but just forgets about from time to time. The appearances, the presumptions that you might not even know about. Let's talk about one of them that everybody's guilty of, and not in a bad sense, but just you've done it. What clothes are you wearing? Where did you get your clothes?
Who made them?
I don't care if it was made in China. Who was responsible for administration and administrating the creation of the clothes? A U.S. domestic corporation playing by the book and fully 100% under the jurisdiction of the United States. Therefore, listeners, what are you declaring when you put on your shirt, your pants, your belt buckle, your shoes, your socks every single day from a commercial location? What are you declaring?
You're a merchant.
I am within your jurisdiction, United States. I am a U.S. citizen. Officer
in commerce.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Officer, I am operating and ready to be approached for offers in commerce because look at me. I have regular clothes on. And will the officers know this necessarily? No, but it's a basic jurisdictional concept that is known to some of the juris doctorates and the people that are creating these laws. They're using these types of concepts as what we would call legal justifications.
Right, right.
To enact consent statutes upon billions.
Right, right. And that leads, that segues nicely into the rule number three of creditors and their bonds, which is there is no money.
Yeah, Corey, let's just, I just want to like pop this out here. And you know, it might get a little graphic, but listeners, you need to know this. Okay. I liken this is sort of like the SAT examples. This is to this, is that is to that. Mm. Okay. It's sort of like legal justification is to the results as benefits of society are the numbing or the Novocaine, and they're presented in such a way or sold to you as that they're a benefit. Oh, look at all these things if you just go numb that you get to have. And then the result is you get fucked in the ass every single day by the person who gave you the Novocaine, but you can't really feel it until the benefits wear off.
Or get you it? Can't access them anymore because you're
just
in a box.
Just because you have a new fucking iPhone and a new this doesn't mean this is the greatest country in the world. Wake the fuck up, people. Wake the fuck up.
Right.
That's what I wanted to say. That was, I just had to get that out there.
Right. And the presumption is that we are used – presumption is we bought our clothes or purchased our clothes, purchased the vehicle, purchased everything with Federal Reserve notes, which is private military script. It's issued by a private entity, and it has a lien interest. So thereby, there's a lien interest on everything that we purchase.
Which can be overstood, dissolved, renegotiated, or claimed. And what I mean by that is, yes, you bought the clothes. We'll do this, Corey. A lot of the Patriot guys, even the MICs, the CICs, all these people are always like, you guys can't do this. This is the wrong way to do it, and this is the debtor argument way to do it. Don't be the debtor. But they never tell you how not to be the debtor. They just tell you what not to do. They don't tell you other solutions. Mm-hmm. My solution is this. In the same way they're using concepts to support legal justifications for jurisdictional nexus, what I mean by that is, oh, you bought this from a domestic corporation, so therefore you're under our jurisdiction on site.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you choose knowingly now, listeners, if you choose to wear the clothes you're wearing still, you have the duty to rebut the presumption. You must defeat the presumption. But you can use the same weapons or the same concepts. Let's not say weapons because I don't think of it as fighting. I think of it as masterful chess. Mm. You can use the same concepts to support a legal justification that you created those clothes, and I'll tell you how. Mm. Anybody ever sweat? Anybody ever expel their DNA or their substance onto a clothing that was touching their body?
Mm.
For that matter, anybody put a piece of clothing within their energetic field and their consciousness, thereby making it their own, unique, and their observance and experience of the clothing is therefore private and their own?
Mm.
Yeah, I have. Raise your hand.
Mm.
So you only have to defeat the presumption, and something as simple as that, which is a conceptual legal justification, will hold up in court.
Mm-hmm.
DNA being on clothes, making it yours, and you have the claim to it over anybody you bought it from, will hold up in court. You got to have to fight for it.
Right.
because of the ramifications of what that means.
Right. And I'll take it a step further. Who is the source of this so-called money?
We are.
Ah.
You're the source of the value of it. You didn't print it. You give it value.
Exactly.
You're using it.
So we're the creditors to this institution that is printing this money that they're then letting us use to buy their stuff, but we're the source of it to begin with.
That's right. That's right. We're the source. Listeners, you're the source.
You are the source, always.
Look inwards. Justify outwards. Okay?
Mm.
Look what you see within and know to be true within, and the basic core concepts or principles that you know within, and then justify outwards and expand. Learn new knowledge, research, take in that which resonates with you, and expel the rest. In such a way, you will continue building yourself while you're in this body, so that when you do leave the body and you have your soul container, which is still just another body that contains the spark or the spirit or the essence of what you are connected to source, all that is, right? So that when you've left the body, you are still conscious, awake, aware, and you don't fall victim to the same Novocaine or the same traps or same benefits, which do exist out of the body. You better fucking believe they exist. That's where they came from. Anything in the physical world's just a bleak manifestation and fractal of what's already there out of physicality. Know this, learn it, feel it, go within. You guys will get your results.
Yeah.
So I promise we're going to talk about the mailing system. I know a lot of the Patriot guys talk about you must use the registered mail and the post office technology and this and that. We'll touch briefly on it. But first, we're going to go to a commercial break, and we'll see you when we get back.
Having trouble with harassing collection agencies? Creditors breathing down your neck? Feeling like you're drowning in debt? The Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths is here to help you now. GTAC is an ecclesiastical guild association of aggressive debt assassins who can eliminate your debts, free negative marks from your credit report, and get you compensated for unfair collection practices or emotional damages. They have a proven track record of success and sustainable results, which will have creditors and debt collectors shaking in their boots. This is not your typical credit repair or verification. GTAC uses proven techniques and negotiation tactics to completely eliminate your debt or conflict, remove negative marks from your credit reports, and in most cases, GTAC will retrieve compensation for you. Call for your free 15-minute consultation today at 214-290-3053.
1913, the Fed took over. Now private corporations are currency owner, and they'll print that shit till it's straight out of toner. The debt is theirs, it's all on a loaner.
Planet Earth, modern times. The hip-hop music genre has been flooded with darkness. Violence, intolerance, and ignorance are all being subconsciously instilled in the minds of millions of Americans. However, the time has come to end the darkness of rap. A band of rappers has united to bring higher levels of consciousness to Earth through their art. They call themselves the Extraterrestrial Aliens. Tickled Wizard and the members of Extraterrestrial Aliens proudly offer a variety of ways to download and stream their high-vibe raps. Check them out on SoundCloud, datpiff.com, iTunes, or Facebook for free downloads and keeping up with relevant events.
Okay, listeners, welcome back. Ross, if you're listening, that was a little shout out to you, man. I appreciate your question. Thank you very much. We got your spot on there again. So keep rocking that, spiritual rapper. Guys, if you're just joining us, this show is about public versus private. We got a little bit into when we first started, basically, what exactly denotes public, what denotes private. You're also going to have to understand sort of some rules or some guidelines. And we spoke a little bit about, you know, de facto versus de jure. That kind of ties into what we talked about a little bit later, which was presumption. You know, if you're wearing U.S. domestic person clothes, you're presumed on site to be a domestic person who can be approached. You understand? So then we get into what's known as social acceptance and social duty. If you want to be socially accepted de facto, you understand, of fact or as it is, just the way things are, well, I guess now you got to talk like, you know, like the vernacular that is in 2016, and you got to have a certain appearance and certain hygiene according to the, you know, mainstream societal standards, which, by the way, are set into place by a very small number of people using Tavistock Institute mind control, social programming, okay, that type of stuff. Anyways, You have to be socially accepted, so you got to meet these criteria or requirements to be de facto accepted. If you want to be de jure socially accepted, you do it of right, and you'll naturally vibrate towards others who are doing it of right or de jure, and you'll link up. Oh, hey, you know, I've got a little bit of BO, and I don't take a shower every day or something like that. Oh, hey, you don't take a shower every day, blah, 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 blah. You don't wash the natural oils from your skin with ammonias and sulfates and sulfides and silver, you know, nitrates and all these different things. Great, let's link up. I accept you, you accept me. Do you understand? That's the difference between de facto de jure on a social dynamic level. So while you do have duties to be accepted, you also have the rights to find out who's going to accept you and how far you're going to balance that. Mm. Does it make sense, Corey?
Yeah, and also, too, back to what you were saying about the fiction and the real, that the fiction evolves from the real.
It's always tied to it. It can't exist without it. They're one and the same.
And so as much as we talk about this fictitious corporate entities, government entities, you know, the millions of statutes and codes, all of these things really are just reflections of what would be common sense to someone who was operating in their own de jure capacity. So it's a reflection. So it's a reflection of natural law and what would be considered the behavior of a sovereign. But I guess we've just gotten to the point where all this stuff supposedly needs to be dictated to us, and that if we don't fall in line, then there's a penalty attached.
Well, you just got to express yourself individually. You must remain on your square, and if it means that you need to create within your square something that projects or appears to be outside your square as an interface or a hologram to deal with it, then so be it. In the same way as you're conscious or you're unconscious. You're never conscious and unconscious. You're either awake or you're asleep. But you can pass through, right? There's that moment of, you know, the Tibetan monks where they never go to sleep. They're always awake because even when their body shuts down and it gets rests and recuperates, they're still 100% fully conscious, lucid dreaming. So they've learned how to maintain the control on the other side, but it doesn't mean that they're still conscious, because can they get up and run around while they're still doing the conscious lucid dreaming? No. And it might evolve to that state where we can bind the two, but it requires a construct. There still needs to be a substance that connects the two together. Does that make sense? They're never mixed. There's always the interface between you, your consciousness. So we're going to get a little bit into the male technology here in a bit, but I believe we have a caller on the line. His name's Larry. And Larry, welcome. What is your question? How can we help you?
Hello, Jordan. In a nutshell, I need a little bit of legal advice. I'm an artist who moved to an artist community about a year ago, and with limited resources, I didn't have the funds to establish the business in the main part of town, so I'm just a block out of town. And I did some looking around, and I learned that there was a visitor's guide that was published once a year that listed the names of businesses in town. And so I called the guide to find out what it would cost for a half-page ad. I was given the price, and a few days later, the producer of the magazine shows up at my place, and he is indicating that a full-page ad will get much, much better visibility than a half-page ad. I mentioned to him that I had very limited financial resources, evidence the fact that I was living a block out of town, and that if I didn't have a successful season, I probably wouldn't be able to afford to stay in town. And he said, well, you've got to make a decision on this quick, because we go to press in about a week or so. So in essence, he sold me on the full-page ad, alleging that it would get much better visibility than the full-page ad, half-page ad. So as the tourist season began, the very first thing I would do to anybody who visited my studio was to greet them, and then I would ask them, how did you hear about me? Did you see the ad in the visitor's guide? And to a person, every single one said, what is the visitor's guide? We saw your sign out front. And this went on through the entire season. So I made two payments, which covered half the cost of a full-page ad. And at that point in time, I no longer had the funds to continue paying the second half. And I started getting threatening phone calls from the owner of the publication. And I now have a court date for next month that I have to attend to settle this issue. my feeling is that this individual knew very well what business was like in this town because he's been publishing the visitor's guide for a number of years. And he was kind of like a predatory lender when somebody buys a house. And so I'm just wondering if you could offer any guidance as to how I should deal with this when I go to court.
Yeah.
Let me just say one thing. We can offer guidance. We have to say that we do not offer legal advice.
Words out of my mouth. Thanks, Corey. Yeah, I'm not a lawyer. Okay. I'm not a lawyer, Larry. I'm experienced in the law. And I can't give you legal advice, but I can tell you from personal experience and from research and knowledge and knowing the law, you've got a really good position. I know that you're in Arizona, I believe, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I just looked up the deceptive trade practices. You have more than one claim. You've got like six different claims. For them, I could go into this and we can do like a private session if you want to continue it further. I'll give you a free 15-minute sure. consultation. I will tell you this. You have multiple different claims. That was a complete inducement by fraud. If there's a number of different, when the time frames where they say, oh, you got to make a decision now, when the personal visits, that's egregious. The once you've explained your financial situation, they're trying to put you in for a full page still. All of these things give rise to a number of different claims, including emotional damages, mental distress, and anguish, because society, when two people get close to each other and one is pressuring the other, there's almost this sort of how do I get out of this besides saying yes type deal. That's right. Inducement. Mm-hmm. That's distress.
That's damage.
So yes, yeah. By saying I can't give you legal advice, that's true, but I can certainly give you the best guidance and personal experience you'll ever hear, and I will guarantee you that no lawyer will be able to take care of you personally and uniquely like I can, okay, with the consultation.
One other point, if I may.
Absolutely.
In the documentation I received indicating that I had a court date that I was to attend, it indicated mm-hmm. that I had to bring bank statements and tax statements for the last 2 years. And,
so let me ask you a question. What's the yes. what's the nature of the lawsuit? So my next question was to you. Did you institute the lawsuit, or did you receive the
no.
lawsuit? It appears now you've received it.
Yes.
How did you receive it? He got a subpoena.
1 second. You got a yes. subpoena. That means that you're in county mm-hmm. court. Does it not?
It's in the – yes. Mm-hmm.
So it'd be a summons in a higher or lower court. So it is a county and it's not a justice of the peace court.
Well, under judge it said pro tem. I don't understand that terminology, but that's what it listed for.
Somebody
judge.
That's sitting in for a term for another judge. do you have it with you?
I've got it.
You've got it.
I've
okay,
got
let's
it.
Do this. My answer to you is that, yes, there's a number of different ways that I can assist you without representing you, and I believe that you can even file a counterclaim. It will be cost-effective. You'll have the ability to not only, I wouldn't say defend, but you'd actually go on the offensive and show them how that they've damaged you. And the lawsuit that they're bringing is more than likely for account paid or breach of contract or something like that, I would imagine. Did it state the cause?
I don't recall the words, but the amount that was due was $1,000, and he's adding $80 interest to it.
So here's the thing. They can't just file a lawsuit on you willy-nilly. They have to name something, and the only thing that I can think of that would give rise to their lawsuit is them presuming that they had a contract and that you breached it. Hmm. Fraud vitiates everything, therefore there was no contract. And in fact, I'll do some research and we'll talk about this off the air, but I believe that you have does he operate a business formally, Larry?
Yes.
He's
yes.
screwed. He's done. We're going into federal court and you're going to file a DTPA and a whole bunch of other consumer claims on him that he and we have to be careful because of collateral estoppel. It can't be the same venue, the same parties, the same this. Does that make sense? Right. But okay. that is quite a possibility, especially if he's incorporated in another state. That just makes it so much sweeter.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to
yeah,
that.
My intention, and I filled out a document saying that I was asking the judge to award him $1 in terms of damages. I haven't heard of any judgment yet, but I did get this summons for a court date. And so now I'm just wondering the best way to go about dealing with this, okay. because as you stated, there was a tremendous amount of stress and pressure once I realized that I was
That's
really
right.
sold a bill of goods.
and he knew as well as anybody in this part of town who all said, Lawrence, you've made a, Larry, you made a terrible mistake. You should never have dealt with this guy. You should have talked to us first. And I said, you know, I was under the gun because I knew the magazine was going to press very soon, and I just wanted to maximize my exposure in town for the duration of the tourist season. And I found myself in a position where my gross income for the entire tourist season was about $3,800, and the ad was $2,000.
So that's egregious on a few other levels. And Larry, we can talk about it off the air. You have so many different levels of claims. Just rest well assured that I will be able to help you. I'll be able to help you. You know, I know that you don't have a lot of money. I've bartered with other people before for art, for silver, for other things. If you are willing to work with me a little bit, I'm sure that we can not only drop his claim, but we can also get you some compensation as well.
Okay. How best to contact you then to pursue this?
I can get you
relay
the information.
Corey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay.
Thank you so much, Larry. You're welcome. Absolutely. Take some deep breaths. Just understand that you, for lack of a better term, I don't believe in right and wrong, but on an account sheet, you are in the right. You're in the right.
Okay.
You have the value.
Right.
He's got the dishonor.
All right. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thank you, Lawrence.
All right.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Corey. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll talk with him later. Excellent question. Guys, that's a real big thing that I do is consumer credit, consumer law. I know it in and out to a T. There's a number of different things. They literally, if there was a handbook on how to violate consumer laws, they've read it. You know, this is not intended as defamation or slander. I'm only going on presumption. So again, this is my presumption until I'm aware of facts. But based on what I have been told, I'm standing by that statement. From a universal, I can say whatever the fuck I want, you can just deal with it standpoint. I don't really believe in the First Amendment. I believe in it's your problem how you receive what I'm saying. It's my duty to be responsible in how I say it.
Mm-hmm.
And to find the balance is just like everything else in life. You got to find that balance.
Mm.
Okay. Great. I believe that was your friend, Corey. I really appreciate you bringing him on. We're going to be able to help him. That's going to be an awesome case, and I'm super excited to be a part of that.
Yeah, it seems...
That's what I do. That's what I live for.
It seemed a little egregious. So...
Oh, interesting. It's all negotiable, and it's all perception. But the way you build your record is going to shift the perceptions that are being observed of your record, depending on the greater weight of the preponderance of the evidence, which is a legal term. What does it appear more to be? Is it a cat or a dog? Well, I see whiskers and I see a long tail and I see hair and I see this. Oh, it's a cat, right? It appears to be a cat more to me than it does to be a dog. And there might be a few people who say, no, that looks like a dog, but they're few and far between.
Right.
So what does your record show?
Right. In the public or in the court system, that's another thing, public and private. he who has the most, who has the best record typically prevails. But that, just quickly, public and private. Public courts, private law. You want to talk about that?
Well, I mean, that's a whole topic in itself. I would say that you can be private in the public court and you can be public in a private hearing.
Mm.
There's all sorts of mixing. Mm. Again, it's the oil and the water. They colloid with each other. They spin around each other. You shake them up. Everybody goes to the party, the constructive trust party, the criminal charge, the civil case. Hey, how's it going, guys? Mingle, blah, 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 blah. Right?
Right.
But at some point, the oil and the water has to separate. Party's over.
Right.
Okay? So understand how to operate while it's mixed, how to recuperate the separated state, and how to stand on it. And then how to understand that the private bubbles its way into the public, you know, and appears.
Appears.
It appears.
Like a ghost.
Like a ghost, like a fiction, like an apparition. The defendant has appeared.
Okay. Nice.
Excellent show, Corey. We got some good questions. I tell you what, I've made my decision at the beginning of the show, for those of you who weren't listening. I was going to make my decision on a forum or topic or guest for our next show, and I'm going to be taking calls. We're going to be taking full-on calls. We're going to get as many callers as we can, back to back to back, We tried this about a week ago. We didn't get a lot of callers, which is okay. If that's the case next week, we'll do it again and just run with it. But I want as many random questions that apply to people's real lives as we can answer. And I'm willing to stay here and do it for you guys. So
I agree, man. I like the outcomes of those real-time situations. I think we've gotten some good material out of those, so I agree with you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay, guys, thank you very much. And girls, obviously, listeners. We love you all. We appreciate you listening. We'll be here next week. We'll be here every week. If you have questions, give us a call. We're happy to help you out. Thanks for listening. This has been Piercing the Veil with Jordan Michael, Corey Stevens, and we'll see you next week.